I'm BasilMarceau.com, the Republican candidate for governor. I'd like to recall all permits and registration for guns. Everyone can carry guns. If you kill someone, no, you get murdered. You go to jail. And I like to put plant grass or vegetation across the state with any vacant lot and sell it for gas so we can use it for our expenses. Also, I'm going to remove all gold fringe flags from the state and fly the real flag with three stripes. I also want to stop traffic stops. Set it up like the Supreme Court ruled in Noel versus Iowa. If you can't find evidence in a car, you can't look. I want you all to vote for Basil Marceau. I want you to say the Pledge of Allegiance to a Republic in the morning when you come out. And we all pray to God and say amen. And everyone have a nice day. And I see you all at the polls. Thank you. Have a nice day.
Danny at 5, the Sports Hub, where Toucher and Rich. By the way, on that Dilly call, what's lost is that her name was not Dilly. It was Debbie, and Bird wrote Dilly
on the screen. So we're taking calls for Dilly, and
instead of Debbie, he put Dilly.
Again with the Dilly.
Yeah, which is not Dilly, Debbie's fault. That was entirely.
Sometimes.
And by the way, is it bad that I am voting today, and some of the votes I have are out of spite for people that are not in politics?
Oh, just because people have posted things on Facebook?
Yep. I just want to make them sad.
So is it just going to make you feel good?
Yep.
Okay. Even though it might not positively affect what you believe?
I don't know.
What you believe?
Yeah, maybe.
So people who endorse certain candidates have annoyed you to the point that you were voting. You've been reading Capello's timeline again, haven't you?
No. I don't know if I'm friends with Capello.
If I am, wondering.
It's been muted.
Okay. Oh, by the way, speaking of Mark Capello, did you see... Okay, Mark Capello, if you don't know, he is one of the engineers, or he helps out with the broadcasts of the Patriots Radio Network.
Yes.
So
yes.
There was a video that the Sports Hub tweeted out yesterday. And, you know, we had Scott Zolak on, and he said that at one point they were playing, you know, Josie, and he started banging his hand so hard that he thought he had broken his hand and he needed an ice pack and ended up being fine. But there was the call for, I think it was the Edelman pass. And at one point on the video that they posted, Scott Zolak stands up, and Mark Capello, who is sitting in between Sosi and Zolak, slides over on his chair that has wheels and, like, pulls him down, like, as if to protect him from flipping over the side of it. Like, he was going to either fall out of the booth, but it was almost like, you know, your mom when you hit a stoplight and she would put your hand over you.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what Capello did, but he slid super fast and, like, went and pulled down Zolak as if he was going to tumble outside of the broadcast booth. And I saw it on Facebook, and I was like, how often do you have to do that? And he goes, I do it every big call.
Yeah.
He grabs onto Zolak.
Why would you do that? Let him fall in the crowd. It'd be hysterical. He's not that high up. He wouldn't hurt himself.
It'd be the greatest thing ever. And it would sound awesome on the air.
Yeah, I think he's only... he's only a row above the seats,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, if you're standing at the row in front of the broadcast booth, your head is, like, looking at their
broadcast booth is at the top of the lower bowl.
Okay, so fair enough. So it's not like he'd hurt himself. I mean, more than, like, a bruise. You got to let him fall.
You should see the video. I mean, first of all, A, it's kind of funny because it seems second nature, as if it's just, like, an instant reaction. And B, it's, like... pretty violent in the fact that he has to get up there and really grab Zolak and pull him down.
I'm not grabbing him. I'm letting him fall in the crowd. Oh, that would be funny.
Or why do you... I would like to actually find out why he feels the need to do that.
It's probably just, like you said, instinctual. Like, because they probably go to stadiums where, like, if you did fall, it would be real bad.
Right, it'd be to your death. Yeah.
Like, if you fell at a Bruins game from the 9th floor, you're dying.
You're toast. Yeah.
Where you're going to die.
Yeah.
But so they probably go to stadiums where there is the risk of potential death. And to that, he feels the need to do it. It's just become a reflex.
You know what's wildly impressive, though? They are old school, Zolak and Sosi. Like, whereas John Wall, like, I mean, it's, you know, at times, especially when he's calling Celtics games, like, he's so far to the left that you've told us before that when the action is on the other end of the court, there's sometimes where you do have to look down at your monitor to make sure you're getting the right guy, correct?
That, okay. That's fair. If it's in a corner, a certain corner, I have to double check.
Sure,
yes.
And you've seen even on, like, Monday Night Football, there's times where they're not making the call all the time watching the actual field. They're watching the monitor in front of them. Zolak and Sosi, they both have binoculars, and they're doing play-by-play holding binoculars over their eyes.
Yeah, there are certain places where they put them in the corner, you know, and they're like five stories up. So, I mean, they're at the top of the stadium in a corner. And in one situation, I think they were behind. They're like behind one of the end zones.
No, but this is at Gillette. They were using binoculars.
Gillette, yeah, okay.
Which is fair enough. Kind of impressive that you would have the whole game with your hands up like this. As a matter of fact, there was I was watching the video. I'm like, where's Sosi? I can't even see him. I thought there was just some guy holding binoculars.
Right.
But he's got a headset on, and the whole time he's holding it while doing the play-by-play. So somewhat impressive. I just love that you have to wrangle in Scott Zolak, because that would be the greatest moment. If there was a video of Scott Zolak falling out of the booth, he got so excited, it would be that clip would go down in the Radio Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
It'd be better than show ponies, unicorns.
Where's the beef?
No, he would fall and it would be funny. Nick, go ahead.
Hey, just I called Amy Lawrence yesterday and not very happy about my record being broken today.
Yeah, who found out that he called at 3:30? Like, how did we get that information?
The overnight guy was listening for it.
That's good. So if you're just joining us, the first Sarge call of the day was to the fill-in for Amy Lawrence, and it was at 3:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was very exciting.
Sets a new record.
Nick, I'm sorry.
Nick, you had the record for a while.
Well, guess what? Tomorrow's a new day.
All right.
I get up very early in the morning. And you better believe a 2:30 call would be in place.
God bless you.
You really got to want
God
it.
God bless you, Nick.
Good for you.
You're a fighter. Don't let him ever tell you anything different. Don't let him ever tell you anything different.
Oh, my goodness.
You are a fighter. Some people, and you know what? The people that are, I'm voting almost entirely just because of what they have been screaming and yelling about. I would assume philosophically I have a problem with it, because usually people who go nuts on Twitter or Facebook are idiots. So but yes, out of spite for people.
Okay.
That is a big part of my voting process.
I'm told the crowds early on are big.
Oh, yeah.
They're big, much bigger than usual this year. I'm told the polling places are packed early in the morning.
Well, in Newton, they're trying to ban weed shops. And it's like people voted for it already.
Yeah, I know. It's strange. Like in different cities. And first of all, it's taken forever. When did that get passed? Like a year and a half ago? 2 years ago?
Well, it took even longer for the medicinal marijuana, I believe, if not the same amount of time. So it's just funny because, like, I don't think it's going to pass in Newton.
Well, what's great is that there's already ads on the top of cabs all over the city for a weed delivery service. Is that there's an app that you can download, and it's a weed delivery service, which would be kind of an interesting job to work, being the guy that shows up when people want to order their weed, at least at the very beginning of it, when the you know, there's some people who I know that even though it's legal, still feel this weird stigma, which I don't understand why, but that's going to be an interesting, that would be a great gig.
Well, that service is in existence as we speak.
It's called I Know a Guy.
No, it's called that they deliver to your home. But that's a fairly common thing. But I've been talking to people, and unfortunately, I can't handle marijuana, and I always, because it's so much better for you than drinking and all this stuff. So if I could just take an edible and like relax and go to sleep, it would be fantastic. It's better for you than pharmaceuticals. But I've now been talking to people, and it's pretty much split down the middle. There's people that absolutely love weed. And they think it's the best, or there's people that it just has a psychotic effect and that you can't take it. Remember we had that comedian on and he was saying the same thing? There's just some people, and it seems almost 50-50, some people that just absolutely hate it like I do, and some people that think it's the greatest thing ever. It's very frustrating, because when edibles first came along, I went, oh, hey, neat. Like, hey, what's the need? You don't ever have to take something to go to sleep. You you lose a lot of weight because, you know, maybe you're not having those that wine at night.
Sure.
And then and then you go, oh, well, this freaks me out. And the next day I can't function. So this is no good for me.
Well, I mean, as you know, I've never been high before, but I'm still not going to smoke a joint. I'm going to do all edibles. Edibles will be the only thing. It just seems like a pain in the ass. And you probably smell. You probably reek afterwards as well. And
they have vape pens and stuff.
Yeah, I can't do vaping. I just see a guy with a vape, and I just immediately go douche.
Well, it's not one of the squares like the cigarettes. It's just a pen.
I understand, but it's a vape pen. I just see a guy walking down the street vaping, and I'm like, that's a guy.
So
I
you're
going to
start. You're
going
to start doing weed.
I'll start with that. Oh yeah, yeah, with edibles, without a doubt. Yeah.
Okay, but the only thing that's been stopping you is literally it's illegality.
No, it's not even the illegality. It's that I don't even really know anybody that would have made it easy for me to buy. It's just has been kind of an inconvenience. But if it's easy enough to go down the store and get some, then I'll definitely do weed.
Do weed.
Eat weed. However, if you're eating it, you don't smoke weed, so I will ingest weed.
Yes, you will ingest marijuana. Danny, go ahead.
Yeah, so I don't know how familiar you guys are with the process. So for the stores to open, technically it's still illegal to sell because they haven't given out the permits yet. But it's not illegal to gift it to someone. So a lot of the weed services, they want you to have your medical card, but then there's a handful that you order what you want, and what they do, so say you get $50 worth, they bring you a little jar with like a flower painted on it, and they're selling you the jar for $50, and they're gifting you the weed that's in that jar. So that's how they get around it loophole-wise without having to have the permits yet.
I think that's something
that someone's going to try to find a way to close up soon.
I think they try to do that with the prostitution, is that you're giving them a gift.
Yeah, sure.
Like you're putting it in a like a greeting card. Somehow that would get you through all the stuff.
Happy birthday.
Well, it should be interesting.
Hey, full phone lines.
Mary could have gotten getting a card, by the way.
She was offered it 1,000 times.
Well, getting a card is the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah, anyone could get a card. But, I mean, this was like, I mean, they told her, listen, do you want medical marijuana? And she said, you know.
When is the first time you're going to do this?
When a shop opens. When a shop opens and I'm not at a place where I'm, like, around my kids where I have to be responsible for them. Like, you know what I mean? Like if there's, like, a Friday night where I can just do an edible and I don't have nothing to do the next morning. So whenever I can buy it in a store, that's when I'll do it.
All right. Ryan, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going, Fred?
Hey, what's
so
up?
So I was thinking, and if THC is too intense for you, it gets you high, you don't like it, you can use CBD edibles.
No, I've smoked a lot of CBD. It just doesn't do anything to me.
Well, yeah, no, that's the point. It gives you the medicinal without the fun part.
Right. But does it help you sleep? Because it doesn't even make me tired.
Yeah, if you eat it, because it gets broken down differently. If you eat it, it'll put you to sleep.
Because CBD is legal. CBD is
in all 50 states. Yeah, it's FDA approved.
You can get CBD delivered to you through the mail, and it's not illegal.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try it again. We have CBD oil at the house, but you have to eat it. You say.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's a tincture, if it's an oil and like a dripper, you can drip it on your tongue too.
Nah, this is you got to smoke it in a pen. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, I will try and see the CBD edible, because CBD does not get, it's not a psychotic or whatever the hell it's called, so it doesn't get you high. That's what Pete Davidson claimed to be smoking before he went to rehab, is just CBD.
That seems like a nightmare.
CBD?
Yeah, isn't that the... I'm sorry, is that the stuff with the psych...
No, I don't think there's any THC in CBD. All right, very good. There's my...
There's our lesson for the day.
A half-assed lesson that I know a little bit about. All right, we'll be back. The Ottawa Senators, some controversy going on around them also.
They were taped without them knowing.
Yeah,
talking about how awful their coach is and how much their goalie sucks.
Yeah.
And the tape was leaked.
Yep.
Talk about a nightmare.
It's 1984, baby.
Dude, I'm not kidding you,
no,
but this is a nightmare for anybody. The privacy reasons, but more than anything, if you're one of these dudes, today's going to suck at work.
Yeah. All right, we'll return.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich, the Sports Hub.
.985 the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. The Ottawa Senators are not a good hockey team. And It's a scary time to be alive. These are two lessons that were learned recently.
So this was around October. I think they're saying it's October 29th or 30th. But so the Ottawa Senators were in Arizona, and they several members of the team took what looked to be like a stretch SUV Uber. And they were, there's a video of them. So the Uber driver has a dash cam that is filming these guys while they're in the car. Now, it doesn't, the players don't seem to know that they're being recorded at the time. As a matter of fact, at the beginning of this video, the driver doesn't know who these guys are and asks them, what team are you on? Because he hears them all talking about, you know, they're bitching and moaning about what's been going on with the team lately. They're talking about their goalie. They're complaining about one of the coaches on the team, not Guy Boucher, but the
Raymond, an assistant.
Yeah, Martin Raymond, who's an assistant of the team. And this is a 5-minute, all of these guys crapping on everyone and everything around the organization. So here is, and the players who are in here is Chris Weidman. Who are some of the other guys that are on there? I mean,
Weidman at it again.
Yeah, I don't think like a ton of huge names. Dylan DeMello and a couple others. But here they are sitting in the car, once again, not knowing they're being recorded.
Because you know there's probably like a little sticker on the window.
Probably a tiny little thing that says you are being recorded.
You should have to be able to, you should have to give consent to being recorded. I mean, the driver doesn't have to pick you up.
Not always. There's some states where you don't. As a matter of fact, I think Arizona, they're saying, is one where you don't. It's like a one-way consent state.
So, and then I can release whatever you said publicly?
Now, that I don't know, but you can be recorded.
Seems wildly invasive.
Now, the reason these guys have cameras is obviously for good reasons, for their safety, but the fact
that I don't have a problem with them having cameras. They should, though, inform you when you get into the vehicle that they're taping.
And once again, as you said, it's probably by a tiny little sticker that's the size of a postage stamp that's on the dashboard somewhere.
Yeah, I just think that this, if these players want to push it, which I don't think they do, that they could probably get somewhere. All right, so here they are in the back of an Uber.
You know, free break-in.
The best part about their break-in is the fact that we don't even slow them up.
No, never.
They come in like blazing speed, too. Andy's like, oh,
yeah, flying down the way.
You're talking about the goalie. It's like these teams come at like a blazing speed, and our goalie's like, oh, blank.
Yeah, flying down the way.
In practice, when we break out against you guys, we get in every time.
What team did you guys play for?
Ottawa.
Oh, okay.
You can tell we're really pleased with, you know,
PK. Yeah, I named Marty Raymond.
Marty Raymond. As you would probably guess, our PKs are the bottom of the league right now.
Yeah, we're like 68% dead of today.
No, we're not.
Yeah.
Will you please look at
us? We're like second or third.
What's our keeper?
We're 10th. We get buried on tomorrow. Flyers and Hurricanes. We get buried on tomorrow. We're bottom of the league.
Would they go 2-for-5 last game? Marty Raymond.
No, I think they went 1. They went
only coach in NHL history to have the worst power play and worst PK within a
back to back
within a calendar year of each other.
It's actually hard to do.
It is.
Impressive.
Do you notice that when he runs the video, like if you actually do pay attention, he doesn't ever teach you anything. He just commentates what's happening. He's like, here's so-and-so skating on the wall with the puck.
Yeah, he doesn't say what to do with it. Yeah.
Well, here's the other thing, too. We don't change anything ever, so why do we even have a meeting? Like, I haven't paid attention in 3 weeks. And, like, I got my first shift, like, last game.
Must have been listening.
Yeah. And I knew what to do because he hasn't changed a thing.
I also hate how he quizzes us. He's like,
what do you do here, Max?
Max's like, I don't know. For me?
Is there anyone who has ever had a job that when you get together with coworkers doesn't like critique what's happening at that job?
Sure. I mean, this is everybody. Like, I mean, I guarantee you every team has had a meeting like this. Like, there's one like assistant guy that they're all kind of pissed off at. And even at the beginning, they're kind of ripping on themselves about having a awful penalty kill.
Well, just but regardless, then, I mean, this is, I mean, you could go into any workplace and tape people while they're out.
However,
they're going out as a collective, and then, you know, and then what? I mean, it's not like they're doing nothing that people don't do. I mean, everyone with a job, when you go out with coworkers, not everyone, I mean, what do you think, the conversations? It's not human nature. Your conversation is like, hooray for the company. I mean, like, you got little things that piss you off.
Well, it's like those stories where someone will go out to dinner, someone famous, and a person at the other table will overhear them saying something that might not have been the most flattering towards someone else, and all of a sudden it's in the papers.
Right. I mean, all they're doing so far is just doing what people do and bitching about work. I mean, everyone does it. If you go out with a group of workers, there's going to be pet peeves and things that are going on that you're not going to like.
And by the way, if this guy who leaked this was trying to get like some sort of money or something for it, you know, trying to leak it out there, my man's got his face all over the video. You know who the driver is.
Right.
Like, he's right there in the front right corner. His face is the biggest of all the faces. So you know who the guy was and how that video got out there.
No.
It's like,
I got it wrong. Like, he came up to me after. What do you think of this?
No, coach, we're at practice at school.
He asked me once too, and I didn't give him the good answer, and he came to see me after, and I was like, Marty, I didn't play a shift in like since the start of last season.
I wasn't even mad.
Dutchie, I saw you get hit, and
great.
He's like, if you notice, if you notice Mello was over there.
Look at this play with Mello.
Mello, we need to do something crazy tomorrow.
Yeah.
We need you to like slide and block him with your Mello, tomorrow.
Find a nice battle behind the net, maybe we'll get a
Tomorrow you like legit need to slide out and block on your head. Right. Don't get hit in the face, but
hey Mello, if he asks any questions, you have to answer.
Yes, yeah.
So after you answer, he goes.
Yeah. Right, if he asks a question tomorrow, call him Mello.
No, please ask a question. Just so it says, great question, Mello.
I'll try to get that tomorrow.
Great question.
It's Mello, great question.
Hey, Marty, just a stupid question like that we all know. Yeah. Right, so what are we doing here? Are we cutting this off?
Yes. You want us going hard, right?
Are we cutting the top still, or are we just standing there and letting them shoot one-timers?
Yes, Mello.
Are we going up 17 tomorrow?
Hey, Marty, what's our game plan for PK today?
This is an absolute punching bag.
17.
Marty, are we hesitating, yes or no?
Smart.
Thanks. Have a great time, man.
All right, then they're very nice to the guy. Like, hey, have a good day. All right. And then the guy drives off and is like, all right, well, I'm going to leak this out there.
Yeah, and the thing is that they're a horrible team, and they're griping about being horrible. I don't care what they did. I really don't care what they did short of assaulting the driver or assaulting someone else. There's no excuse for this to come out.
No. That's the story. The story is how this got out there. Because you're right. I mean, everyone has complained about something. And you think that if you're just hanging out with your friends, but now you have to constantly have your head on a swivel. You got to be thinking, who is trying to get something from me? And you got to think that if you're famous. And when the guy said, you know, what team do you play for? And he said, Ottawa. He's like, oh, well, these guys obviously have something to lose. Maybe I can make some money out of
right.
this.
And what is the end game? Seriously, how much money can you really make out of embarrassing a franchise? It's already embarrassing. And one of the guys, by the way, is Matt Duchene, who I think is the alternate captain.
All right. Maybe the idea is that you get some sort of internet celebrity and that you get followers on Twitter or wherever
but
the
hell. But they see your face.
An extra star rating system for Uber? I mean, what?
No.
What's the end game?
No, the end game is internet fame. That, hey, I have this video, and then, you know, people are going to like it, and I'll pick up some followers, and therefore I win. But there's absolutely, especially the Ottawa Senators, like, you know, like, what? This isn't the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, the Ottawa Senators, what do you think you're getting out of this?
The owner is actually threatening to move them out of town.
Well, I'm sure that would be a travesty for the NHL. but I just don't know how you can do that and how you can release that. In under any circumstances, short of committing a crime, I don't care what you're saying, I don't know how they can release that. If someone's having, you say things in private conversation that you would not say publicly. You do. Everyone does. Priests, rabbis, everyone says stuff in private conversations. You don't think that, you know, that even like psychiatrists, without naming names, start their bitching about patients? I mean, come on. I mean, what kind of life are we going to live now? That you can't be critical of anything or you can't say anything? If we all had a microphone that broadcast to people all day, even social justice warriors on social media, you don't think that they never say anything?
Maybe just say nice things about people for now on, Fred. Come on.
Well, no.
Get with it.
Because I don't like everything.
That's your job, Rich.
That's your job, Rich.
I just don't say it out loud.
Well, that makes you not normal.
Rest
of us heathens speak freely.
You know, there's...
Mary gets dumped on pretty bad. She hears it all. And then I just shut up.
Fair enough.
She's my therapist.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why you can't be critical of something anymore. You have to like everything. You have to watch what you say. There was an article in this theroot.com about something Rebel Wilson said, which you go, Rebel Wilson, why do you want to talk about it? It's because we've gotten so crazy as a society. You should hear what they call Rebel Wilson out for, and then the length that they go to. And it's like, you're concerning yourself. If you're such a big progressive, like such someone who's like so... want to change the world. Mm-hmm. The day before the elections, you attack Rebel Wilson for a non-political statement. I'll just give you a hint. She said that, I'm proud to be the first ever plus-size girl to star in a romantic comedy. And then people said Monique and Queen Latifah did it first and then started attacking her on Twitter. Insinuating that she was racist. And then when they got blocked by her, they put it up as an example of her racism.
Okay.
I mean, I got to read you some of this article. It is the biggest pile of garbage I've ever seen in my entire life. The idea that someone took the time to write that. Oh, my. Well, let's get in. Like, greatest plus-size actresses ever to star in a romantic comedy. I mean, we could talk about it all day. I mean, Jesus. All right, we're going to talk to Bobby Orr. Here are the headlines.
98.5. Toucher and Rich.
The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. It's always an honor to have Mr. Bobby Orr in studio.
I did some stuff with Mr. Orr during his signings for his first book, which was fantastic, and I have displayed in a place of great value in my home. And now there is a second book out now, and it's Bobby, My Story in Pictures. You can get that signed today at Wellesley Books at 82 Center Street in Wellesley from 6 to 9 p.m., And one of the great things about Bobby Orr is he's truly one of the nicer people that you'll meet. He takes time for the fans. He recognizes me, which is exceptionally rare for someone in his position.
They told me I had to.
Yeah. They gave you like a rundown before you came in. You're like, oh, yeah, okay.
He likes his ego to be struck.
I know. Massage the ego and away we go.
That's right. All right. So, Bobby, the difference between this book and the first book is that this is your life in pictures, essentially.
Yes, it is.
And you were going through the book with me before we came on the air, and you showed me. All right, the situation that you're at home with your roommates when you're playing. How many roommates you have? What was the average square footage of the home?
There were four of us. This was my rookie year. Is Teddy Hodgson, Ross Lonsberry, Joey Watts, and me. And we had a big home out on the ocean, and. The folder that I have in there, we're preparing dinner. Pre-game.
Yeah.
I think those are just props for the show, for the magazine article, because right. We've got a whole pile of white bread, we've got boiled potatoes, and we got a pot of baked beans. And that's our pre-game meal.
Lots of protein. No.
My guess is as soon as the photographer left, we had a great restaurant down the street from our home. We headed to the restaurant.
I would imagine four guys living in a house. There's not a lot of cooking.
You see the nutritionists on the teams now looking at that meal saying, my gosh.
Yeah. This is everything wrong. Yeah. And so it's interesting because in the book there's also... really, when you just see the difference between professional athletes then and professional athletes now, people had to work in the off season, and you showed me a very interesting picture, something that you wouldn't think an NHL player would do in the off season, but here we are.
When we lost our good pal Johnny McKenzie this year, and I went up to visit him, and his friend had photos out on the table, and I'm going through the photos, and there's one which I have in the book. And what Johnny used to do in the summertime was he was a rodeo guy, and he was a calf roper. I mean, he'd on his horse, he'd rope the calf, jump off his horse, tie the legs of the calf up and put him down, and he's timed. And that's what Johnny did in the summertime. But we all worked. The photo next to it, Billy Spear. Billy Spear was a barber, and he was our in-house barber. But that's what Billy did in the summertime. We all had to work. I had a hockey school. Mike Walton and I had the R. Walton sports camp. Eddie Westfall, if I recall correctly, he worked for Carling Breweries. So many of the guys farmed. Dallas Smith worked the farm. So we had to work in the offseason.
Oh, that's amazing.
Was management at all concerned about one of your teammates doing something as dangerous as calf roping?
No. I'm not sure they knew.
Okay. They weren't keeping tabs on him like they do off-seasons now.
And if you look at Johnny, I mean, he was a little tank. He was a strong little fella, right?
And, yeah.
That's how he got so strong. He didn't lift weights. Yeah. He didn't lift weights like they do today. So,
well, it's funny too, because in some of these pictures that I'm seeing here, you know, I'm looking at the, you know, some of these classic days back at the Garden, and I did you have a relationship with any of the not did you, but who did you have the best relationship with from the Celtic side of things? Because you guys would obviously probably, you know, spend a lot of time together between the Bruins and the Celtics.
I became a good friend of Hondo's and Cowan's.
Oh wow!
So I knew I didn't know Larry well. I said hello to Larry, but I didn't know Larry well. Always very nice, mm-hmm. but David and Hondo and many of the other guys too. We didn't hang around a lot.
Yeah,
we would see each other once in a while, and certainly at golf tournaments and so on.
I hear stories about. We've actually had Tommy Heinsohn on before, and I know
I see Tommy,
of course, Tommy, yeah. And he tells stories about how like guys would get off the court and they would start smoking. Like he would just like smoke a cigarette, and put away. Were there ever any hockey players who would kind of?
Oh, God, yes, really? A lot of smokers. Stan Mikita was a big smoker.
Oh yeah,
well, it really hurt him.
Guy Lafleur was a big smoker.
Oh, yeah,
wow. And
would they smoke between periods?
Yes.
Just be beers and smoke.
Yeah, yes. But, you know, we didn't. There were players in the NHL wouldn't talk to other players. I mean, I have to play against them tomorrow. I'm not talking to them. I mean, that's what they thought. That's the attitude they had.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, Ted Lindsay. You know, Ted Lindsay would go to an All-Star game and he wouldn't talk to anybody. I got to play against him tomorrow.
Do you like that? Because that's kind of a pure, you know, as a fan, you like to imagine the players on the team that you like hating everybody else who's not on the team. Well, and we know in reality it's not like that.
Today's day and age, I mean, All-Star games are just like a big get-together. Everyone's best buds with everyone else.
But it's more than that today. In the combines you have, like in hockey, for example. I mean, we didn't see the guys much way back. Coming up, you know, we played in our junior teams and we played against them, but now they have the combines, they have this all-star team, and they have the world championship, so you're with them all the time. You're going to be friends. You just hope it doesn't affect the game in any way, and I don't think it does.
Who's the meanest, like, the of all the guys that you saw, who's the meanest?
John Ferguson was tough. Fergie was tough. He was a heavyweight. I didn't play with Stan Jonathan, but Stan was a fluey guy and as tough as nails.
Trash, how was the on ice trash talk?
No, not bad. I mean, there was a little.
They're too busy beating the hell out of each other.
There's not much trash talk today. You get thrown out for trash talk.
Yeah, I know. It's funny how it's changed. You're absolutely right.
I have a question. We've had Derek Sanderson in studio before, and of course, he wrote a book about his life. Do you have a good Derek Sanderson story for us?
Ooh.
I mean, there are so many to pick from, I'm imagining. Use your best judgment, yes.
The one thing was, any time I had injuries or anything, the first call I received, I mean, I had many surgeries after playing, and I had things I was supposed to do and sort of obligations. The first guy I got a call from would be Derek. Do you need me to do anything? Well, I think that says a lot about
that's awesome.
I mean, all we talk about are... Derek's antics. I mean,
yeah,
and he was different. There's no question about it. And we forget what kind of hockey player he was. Derek Sanderson, a hell of a hockey player.
Yeah. Right.
He was the best. You know, Stan Mikita used to be the face-off guy. Derek Sanderson took that over when Derek was behaving and really playing. Derek Sanderson was a heck of a hockey player. Derek Sanderson and Eddie Westphal were the two of the best penalty killers in the history of the game. If you guys might be too young.
Well, you've seen the videos. the old grainy videos.
They were the two best penalty killers ever in the game. But Derek, you know, we don't talk about his high. He was, if he'd behaved, he'd be, no, seriously, if he'd behaved, and he didn't behave, he'd be in the Hall of Fame. He was a very good hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking to Bobby Orr. The book, which is very cool, is called My Story in Pictures, and there's stuff from when Bobby was much younger. And you mentioned, you know, junior hockey and these teams and all these guys playing together. I mean, it's famous how you were discovered. Like, how lucky do you feel? How much of that was luck and how much of that was, you know, what was it like back then to get discovered, to get signed? Because it's so much different now.
Well, it's so different now. You scouts are everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're covering every league in the world. Back when I was coming up, I mean, we didn't have networks, the ESPNs, the NASA. We didn't have anything. The biggest thing we had, when I was coming up, McLean's magazine. I got on the cover of McLean's magazine. That was huge. You guys don't even know what McLean's
magazine is. No.
Canadian, and it's still in print in Canada.
I suppose it's much like Playboy.
But we didn't have coverage and like it is today. I went in we were in a tournament and I went to play in Gananoque, Ontario, in a playoff. We were Perry Sound was playing Gananoque, and we got beat in the game. But the Bruins scouts were there, Baldy Cotton, Mel Schmidt, Ren Blair, and Mr. Adams, the owner of the team, used to go out and scout. Mr. Adams would go out and scout.
Wow.
They were there to look at two other players that were playing for Gananoque that they wanted to have for their junior team in Oshawa that was starting the next year. So they found me by mistake. We happened to be playing them. They didn't know who I was.
Did you know they were there?
No.
Because that might change things. All right. Okay.
I didn't know they were there. Then Ren Blair, who was going to be the general manager of Oshawa, he lived in Perry Sound to convince my mother to let me play junior hockey at 14. And then I had a contract. You sign. It's not like it is today where you have a draft.
Right.
Back there, the NHL teams owned the junior teams, and they would fill junior teams with their players. They owned all the players.
Mm-hmm.
And I signed what you call the C form. And I was owned by the team then. I got $1,000. They stuccoed my mother's house. My father got a car, and this was in 62, no newer than 58. And I got a suit. I didn't have a suit, so I got a suit. That was the contract. So,
how much wear did you get? How much use did you get out of that suit?
Well, it was the only one I had.
I know. So I'm saying, did it resemble like a well dressed hobo at the end? Or?
The boys took me in to have me. I funny you say that. The first weekend I went, I used to just play on the weekends. I'd go to commute to Toronto Friday, and we used to play in the Metro Junior A first, so we played Friday, Saturday, Sunday most weekends. So I'd go for the weekend and play and come home and go to school. Wore my new suit. The boys took me into the tailor to kind of trim it up for me.
Right.
it was my grandfather's.
It was hanging on by a thread.
It was hanging, yes.
So with the current group of Bruins that are here, you know, they obviously have some access to you and you're close with the team. Yeah. And has there been one in particular that has formed a relationship with you that reaches out to you maybe for some advice? You know,
yeah,
I mean,
Charlie McAvoy is one of our kids and Adam McQuaid was. And so any of our players that played on the Bruins or have been on the Bruins, we talk, but we're careful too on, there's a lot of coaches.
Yeah. But you're Bobby Orr. Yeah. That's the difference.
It's still not our job to confuse them. Coach many coaches behind the bench. They got the press, you guys, telling them how to play.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Well, I know better than anyone. So you should see me on skates.
I try to be real careful. If anything, we know their strengths. If they're not playing to their strengths, we'll suggest that. But they've got enough coaches. We don't want to confuse them.
Are there any guys currently that you see a little bit of yourself in?
I think Charlie. Charlie's got a little offense in him. You know, the Bruins. You know, Carlo, he's I'm watching last night. He's up the ice a little bit now, too, which is great. And I thought the Bruins played really well last night. They deserved the win in regulation. But, someone did, not long ago, will another defenseman ever win the scoring? And I said, I don't think so. And they said, well, why not? Because they won't let them. With the shooting the puck up the glass. You know,
Right.
I mean, you got a motor with it. If you're gonna be up there, and they don't play like that anymore. They've taken the center line out, and the play now is to up and chip it in and go after it.
Yeah.
That's a lot of the game now. So pretty hard.
Yeah.
Picking up points or scoring that way. And that's the only reason that, I mean, you look at Burns out in California. He'll put some points off.
Yeah.
He's going to put, and he's got the other guy over there with him now too. So
Carlson,
they're gonna put some big points on. they're finding their way. They're gonna be fine, and they'll put some big points on.
Out of that current crop right now, who's going in the rafters of the Bruins?
Oh my gosh, too early. Chara, Bergeron layup.
Absolutely.
I mean, that Bergeron line is.
They're good.
I mind the best line in hockey.
Absolutely.
1-2, McKinnon out in the McKinnon line in Colorado is pretty good, but that line is pretty good. The Bruins, they're going the right direction. You look at their defense and the key to a playoff. You look around. How many teams can win the cup? There's a lot of teams.
Yeah,
and it's going to come down to health, keeping your players healthy in the lineup, your goaltending, and how badly do you want to. When do you want to pay the price? And paying the price means, you know, to win a Stanley Cup, 4 series, 7 games. It's hard.
It's grueling.
It's grueling. It has to be the hardest cup to win. And do you want to pay the price? I mean, when you get up in the morning, you say, you got to get up, suck it up, and you got to get to practice, and you got to take another bump, and da da da. That's paying the price. And health and the goaltending.
Now, Bobby, you obviously you're involved in the business of hockey, and people praise you and the way you've handled all that, but you don't foresee labor peace. You think that there could be a situation.
My comment was, someone asked, "Do you think there'd be a lockout?" And I said, "I hope not, but I'd be surprised if there wasn't."
Right,
there are issues on both sides, and we're not going to discuss the issues, but there are issues on both sides.
Sure,
and both leaders are pretty strong guys.
Yeah.
And I just hope that they're talking now, and I would think they are. Just the game is going in such a great direction.
Yeah.
It'd be a shame to shut her down.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, but there are some issues.
All right. So, well, Bobby Orr, My Story in Pictures, I fully endorse this. It's a great book, a great follow-up to his first. You can go to the signing. That's today at Wellesley Books, 82 Central Street in Wellesley. Strangely enough, Wellesley Books is not somewhere else. It is indeed in Wellesley. and that is from 6 to 9 p.m.
Moved into Dorchester.
That's
right.
Having hosted one of Mr. Orr's book signings in the past, my suggestion is to get there well before 6. I would. There tends to be a line when Mr. Orr is signing. And, Bobby, as always, it is such a pleasure, and we do enjoy having you in so much.
Appreciate your help, and thanks. Nice being with you.
All right, so we will be right back. 98.5,
the Sports Hub.